Okay. Hare Om.
Sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay. So now Sutra 14. Some say the individual souls are the supreme. Others say the individual souls are different from the supreme. Still others say the individual souls are both one and different from the supreme. Right? Commentary by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhadarayana and his followers affirm that the individual souls are the supreme. Kasyapada and his followers affirm that the individual souls are different from the supreme. Sandila and his followers affirm that because the individual souls are part and parcel of the Supreme, the souls are different from the Supreme. And because the souls are part and parcel of the Supreme, the souls are non-different from the Supreme. Right? Different kinds of evidence may be produced to support all these different views. For example, in the Upanishad, see what we're getting here is that these will be the basis of, this is basically what you're going to get. In, if you have your philosophies, because you in a philosophy, then they'll have to be, the first point will be your sambandha. So that has to, one of the points has to establish the nature of the soul. So then, having done that, then you'll say the soul is supreme, right? Basically, the souls are different from the supreme, or that they're simultaneous in one and difference. And then, of course, there's also the atheistic opinion that the souls don't exist. Right, but that would fall into the same category of basically making them supreme. Is that? Oh, I mean, and then your supreme will have two parts. One is supreme, meaning because it's part of the material energy, and the material energy is supreme. Therefore, in that way, they also are supreme. Right? There's a non-difference. Or those ones who are taking it that Brahman is supreme, so the soul is not different from Brahman. So in this way, it'll be supreme. But both of them are atheistic. Both of them are, you know, dealing with materialism. Right. Then we say that they're different from the supreme. So then this will get rid of both of these philosophies, because if it's different from material nature, then the material energy can't be supreme, because that means the soul is something higher. And if the soul is something different from the supreme, then he can't merge in Brahman. Does that make sense? And if he's different, then he can't also just evaporate. Right? So that then gets rid of these things, but it doesn't explain the interrelationship with the Lord, why that would be natural. Because if he's different from the Supreme, why does he have to care about the Supreme? You know what I'm saying? If you're different from, you know, some group of people, why do you have to worry about them? No, it's because you're part of that group. That's why you worry about it, right? Being part of the group, you know, then you have something in common. Being an individual within that group, therefore you can be concerned about it, right? If it's all one, how do you be concerned? Right? You can only be concerned if there's a difference. Does that make sense? Like that. So then that answers all these things. But the point is all these points can be done, because we don't have a problem with the soul is non-different from the Supreme, but the soul is different. We just know that they both exist simultaneously. We only have a problem when you say it's this or that, or it can be this and that, but not simultaneously, right? So our point is it's both simultaneously, yes.
Then is it easier to describe it as a specific difference as opposed to a general, because you have a general difference, which is just, say, different colors. So
that you get into, yeah. It means a general difference. But here, meaning this individual conscious living entity. That's the difference, like that. That they're not the same, meaning just one consciousness or just, you know, no consciousness, all just one existence. So that's basically, they're working on the existence as the same. No, it's a separate existence, like that. You know, so their existence is individual. But there's commonality. So therefore, the two existences have something in common that they could interact. You know what I'm saying? If your existence or someone else's existence don't have anything in common, you know what I'm saying? In other words, if two people's, you know, worlds have an overlap, then at that overlap they have something in common, they have a relationship. But if they're completely different, then what has it got to do? You know what I'm saying? You know, you have machine lathe, you know, out in the middle of the Sahara Desert in Timbuktu, and you have a fish, you know, swimming in the North Baltic Sea. They have nothing to do with each other. You know what I'm saying? So where is it going to be the commonality? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that unless there's some element that's common, you know, then only there'll be a relationship. So you have to have commonality to have a relationship, but you have to have difference to have relationship. So both have to be there. So that's why we emphasize this, because relationship is the most important. Like that. That's what's being emphasized. While others may, they're pointing out more just the upliftment of the soul, but our point is the upliftment
is to the point of relationship, right? So they all say that when the living entity is established in a relationship, then that's real liberation. So all the acharyas are giving part of this. So the Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva is the natural philosophy of the spiritual world, right? But because that's very difficult to understand, simply because of the particular faith required, right? It's not that it's a hard thing to understand. But therefore, the acharyas for the particular time, place, and circumstance spoke a specific part of this, right? Either to, you know, bring people from being against the Vedas to being in line with the Vedas, then the difference, I mean, the oneness is, you know, is given. Then to bring them from that to Vaishnava, then the qualified oneness or the special oneness is given. To make sure that they, you know, completely get rid of now that Mayavad influence that was able to enable the change from Buddhism, Jainism to Vaishnavism, then you come in and say it's two and just completely cut off, you know, that oneness. So there is no relationship with Brahman, right? Like that. And then to bring out the element that, you know, it's both of these. You can look at it both ways, so it both functions, depending upon the perspective you want to use. Then they're able to establish also then the relationship with Radha and Krishna Vrindavan. But it's not simultaneous. Therefore, there's no such thing as separation. Because separation means they're not together, but at the same time that they are together. Right? So here it's they're always together. You know what I'm saying? So therefore you have to separate the oneness and difference. You know, that you have them both, but you can't simultaneous. So Braja then means that it's all going on. Does that make sense? Yes.
So then is the difference, the manifestation of our independence, then? Or would that not be the connection? Because if you have a difference, then that means you have an independence.
Yeah.
What is the same?
So then
is the independence bridging the difference between the two?
Yes, bridging the difference, but maintaining that difference. So in other words, the mentality is one. The purpose is one, but the position and possibly what they do is different. You know what I'm saying? So that means if you want a relationship with a person, it's not that the two of you have to do exactly the same thing. Sit down and, okay, now lift your spoon. Okay, now put it in your mouth. Okay, now take it out. Now, you know, chew, now swap. Like that. That is very superficial. You know what I'm saying? You know, so in a society, Brahmins do one set of duties, Kshatriyas another, right? That, or, you know, husbands have one duty and the wives have a completely different one. But there's a common ground, you know, the Grihastha Ashram, or, you know, the establishment of the Vedic culture. So there's a commonality. So the Brahmins do what they do, Kshatriyas do what they do, but the commonality is to follow the dictates of the Shastra for, the you know, establishing the Vedic culture. Therefore, they work together, though they're very different. You know what I'm saying? Therefore, you know, in the family also, the parents and the children are different. Their duties are different, but the commonality is the running of the family, you know, that interaction, that experience. So therefore, that being the commonality, their different duties then have a common element. Then there's, you know what I'm saying? But to say that they have to do exactly the same thing, how would that work? So therefore, if you're in the kitchen cooking and you have to do the same thing, then both of you have spoons in the same pot stirring it around. You know what I'm saying? But someone could be cooking, someone could be cutting vegetables. You know what I'm saying? Someone could be cooking, someone could be cleaning. Someone cooking one preparation, someone cooking another. Like that. But there's a commonality, but there's a difference. Does that make sense?
So would it be right in saying that it's oneness in purpose, but difference in activity?
Yes. Or let's say difference in situation in the activity. You had something.
Yeah, why is our philosophy called inconceivable?
Why is it called inconceivable? Because it's only basically by the mercy of the Lord that all these contradictory points. This is the Lord is inconceivable. So all points in the cosmic creation are, you know, perfectly reconciled in him because he is the origin of everything. Right? So only as they expand, then the expansion they start to get different. You know what I'm saying? If you take a point and from there you start drawing a line going in one direction and a second line that's just slightly off from that, then they look the same there. But as you go out, they get farther and farther apart. So that's why it looks like there's a contradiction. But that technically there is no contradiction. You know what I'm saying? But for the logical mind and all that, it appears to be contradictory. Therefore, logicians and these kind of persons then are kicked out, you know, when it comes to discussing these topics, because they can't understand, because their point is, if I can't understand it with my intelligence, it doesn't actually exist, because they are the source of, you know, so they're actually some variety of materialists. Does that make sense?
It's inconceivable to someone who's not a devotee,
basically. You may be able to get some aspects of it done, like if you're dealing with some mundane element and you show the one and the difference, then they would understand that. But as soon as you apply it to the spiritual, then it starts to fall apart for them. Because that means you there must be some faith. Okay? Yes?
How does this connect into consciousness?
Connect into consciousness mean?
Meaning, because there's an individuality in consciousness, but then there's a collective consciousness as well. So.
Because there's a common, it means, in other words, you have a the point of commonality is Abhideya. Because everybody's got a different position in the field of activities. So that means each one of them is bringing about a different result. Right? You know, so their purpose is different. But, I mean, purpose, not, we won't use that word. In other words, if someone's cutting vegetables, then the result of his cutting vegetables will be cut vegetables that can be cooked. And someone else is taking cut vegetables and cooking them. So the purpose of cooking is the same, but the specific accomplishment is different. You know what I'm saying? Purpose is one, but accomplishment is different. So their identity, one's the cook, one is the sabji cutter. Does that make sense? So Abhideya is the common point. That's why the pastimes are the common point where all the different devotees from all the different mentalities have some common ground. Okay? Okay. So now different kinds of evidence to support all these different things. Then. In the Upanishads it is said the individual soul is Brahman. In the Mukunda Upanishad 3.1.1 and Svetasvatara Upanishad 4.6 it is said, quote, the individual spirit soul and the super soul, Supreme Personality of Godhead, are like two friendly birds sitting on the same tree. One of the birds, the individual atomic soul, is eating the fruit of that tree, the sense gratification afforded by the material body. And the other bird, the super soul, is not trying to eat those fruits, but simply watching his friend. In the Katha Upanishad 2.2.4, it is said, the question is asked, when the embodied soul becomes liberated and leaves his material body behind, who will control him? The answer is, the Supreme still controls him. In the Chandogya Upanishad 3.14.1, it is said, this entire world is the Supreme. Therefore, a peaceful and saintly person should devote himself to worshiping the Supreme. Right? So you understand how they can get all these various philosophies? Because it's saying the entire world is the Supreme. So from that, then people can get the material energy is the Supreme. No, what it's saying is this whole entire world, because this world, the matter is just pradhan, undistinguished, just a lump of matter. Does that make sense? So it divides, it separates, it becomes different things because of the influence of the Supreme. So therefore you can say the entire world is the Supreme because everything here is actually Krishna. It's just manifest through, means what we can perceive with the senses is the dead matter. But it's actually the Supreme which is manifesting everything here. That makes sense. So this would be the Upanishadic, but the Karmakandis or even lower can take it. It's just there. The Tantrics could say, "Oh, see here, the Upanishads say that the material energy is supreme."
that make sense? So that's why mimamsa or your hermeneutics is important. What is your interpretation on it? How do you view it? So that interpretation should come from parampara, because it's given by the Lord. Right? The Lord's created everything, so His view will be the best view. So that is handed down in parampara. With that, you look at it. You make up your own, you will be wrong. Right? Because how will the individual soul, which does not understand the complete whole, be able to approach something that's beyond them? Right? So that's why then you listen to authority. You don't make it up. If you doubt authority, you're lost. It's that simple. You can have doubts. That's fine. That means you're in thinking. Right? Because you have it, it has to make sense. When it makes sense, then you have to apply it. So at any point, a doubt could come up. Right? What does it actually mean? How do you actually apply it? That's fine. But you can't doubt authority. You doubt authority, you're lost. You're finished. You can get nowhere. So those who doubt authority, those who are uncomfortable with authority, don't like the concept of authority, can't work with it, they will never actually get to the supreme position. They can't. Right? Does that make sense? You have to have that respect for authority. It's all based on the Shastra. It's all based on Guru. It's all been given down by Krishna. The other saintly persons are giving what's been given by Guru and Shastra. It's just, you cannot make dynamic advancement if you don't respect and accept authority. Does this make sense? Like that. In the Mukunda Upanishad 3.14, it is said, a sage who understands the Supreme, the life of all that live, will not speak of anyone but Him. Such a sage has fallen in love with the Supreme Lord. He is eager to hear of the Lord's pastimes. He actively serves the Lord. Such a sage is the best of all the transcendentalists. Right? So the ones before, they understand Brahman, that's a transcendentalist. Right? And one who sees that he has entered everything and is everywhere and is doing all these different things, controlling everything, that's better. Right? Because then you're seeing the Paramatma. But it says here, who understands the Supremes, the life of all that lives, and then interacts with Him, has a relationship with Him, worships Him, loves Him, that's the best of the transcendentalists. Right? In other words, you see here, he's taking one through the Brahman, the Paramatma, and then now to Bhagavan. Right? So Brahman is the oneness, Paramatma is the difference, and then Bhagavan is the simultaneously one and different. Does that make sense? Right? Because the other one, there's the soul and there's the super soul. They're sitting in the same body, they're different. It doesn't say that they're one. It infers because it says they're friends. But doesn't. The other one says he is the supreme. He's the same as Brahman. Right? Does that make sense? So you're establishing the soul as Brahman. So that's the oneness. Then you're saying, super soul is there, he's, you know, organizing everything, like that. Then, you know, and the supreme is, so that's two. Or you do it through the material energy. So you're seeing the material energy as supreme, and so therefore you're interacting with that. So you can get all your different varieties of either transcendental or materialistic philosophies. But the final point is that person who is the source of it, you have affection for him. Does that make sense? Yes? No?
Yes.
You understand? Because by these verses, if you understand a Chintabheda Bheda Tattva, there is no contradictory verses. Right? Because we can deal with the oneness and the difference. Right? For other people, it makes a difference because they're not accepting a Chintabheda Bheda Tattva. They're not accepting worship of Bhagavan with this form. Therefore, then their interpretation, right, is going to be different. Does that make sense? So, because there is all the different desires of the living entities for these different interpretations, the Lord has then established six schools of philosophy, six mainstream interpretations on the Veda, right? And so all the schools of thought of the world will either fit, you know, specifically into these categories and they'll only take a portion of it, or they will have some mix of these different ones, right?
So these different things are there. You know, God exists, he doesn't exist. He's impersonal, he's personal. You know, like that. You know, like that. Maya is actually there or it's an illusion. You know, it's supreme or it's subordinate. Right? And the soul is either one with the Lord, different from the Lord, or one and different. You understand? So you take all these positions and then you decide what is, so what is going to be there for your method to elevate the soul. Right? Then that will be a difference in sadhana depending upon what you think is important. And then your goal, you know, is it to love God? Is it to just know God? Is it to become God? Is it to become part of the material energy? Is it just to enjoy the material energy? Does that make sense? So you take all these different options, then you can make all these different combinations, and this way you end up with any philosophy there is. Does that make sense? So if you're discussing philosophy with someone, you don't discuss it how they would like to discuss it. You discuss it with the point in mind is, what is their opinion, what is God, what is the soul, what's the material energy, what is their relationship, so therefore what activities are performed to get what result, and what is the position of the soul having gotten that result. Then you know what that, and we know those five, so you always know something to say. So it's not a matter of, well, unless I've studied, you know, all these different things, I won't know how to deal. No, you just have to know these five. You know the Upanishads, you know philosophy. That means you can deal with any philosophy. It's just a matter of being able to understand their terminologies, what we would call that. That's all. You only have to translate their definitions. So if you don't know, you ask them, what do you mean? You know, when they say, yes, you know, the spirit, you know, so what is the spirit? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, what is that? Or, you know, they say, you know, the all pervading, what does that mean? Is he a person, is he not? So you simply have to take the words and then find definitions. Does that make sense? And then, you know, depending on how much or less they have definitions, then you can understand what school of thought they are. Does that make some sense? That makes some sense and connects with the other class? Yeah? Okay, so now Ishvapanishad then makes this point. In the purport to Mantra 7, Srila Prabhupada explains that only advanced devotees are able to resolve these seemingly contradictory statements. Quote, except for the Madhyamadikari and Uttamadikari discussed above, no one can correctly see the spiritual position of the living being. The living entities are qualitatively one with the Supreme Lord, just as the sparks of a fire are qualitatively one with the fire. Yet sparks are not equal to that in fire. The Mahabhagavat, the great devotee, sees oneness in the sense that he sees everything as the energy of the Supreme Lord. Since there's no difference between the energy and energetic, there is the sense of oneness. Although from the analytical point of view, heat and light are different from fire. There is no meaning to the word fire without heat and light. In synthesis, therefore, heat, light, and fire are the same. Right? That makes sense? So he's making a point. Is the Madhyama only because they are able to distinguish within spiritual? Right? The neophyte takes the mundane as the important element. Right? These guys are crazy. All they have to do is back up, push it over, and then take the dirt out. But then they'll back up, and then if it doesn't all fall out at once, which is the perfection, then they keep doing it until they find out it won't fall out. And then having done that for like this 3 minutes, then they have to get over and pull it out anyway, when they could have just driven up in the first place and done that. Right? Because they just drive up, it doesn't make so much noise. They back it up, it doesn't make so much noise. It's when they're trying to make it all fall out in one shot. You know, if you sit here all day, you'll see them do it, you know, two or three times in a whole day. But they think they can do it every time, and so therefore they do like this and waste a lot of, you know, petrol, but somehow or another think they're saving money. Right? You know, like that. You know, like the car drivers and, you know, Indy car drivers, you go up as soon as any opportunity, they turn off the car. even if it's like for 10 seconds, they figure they saved the 10 seconds of petrol. What they don't understand is when you start the engine, it uses more petrol than if it was just idling very peacefully. So these guys are the same. So less brain. Okay, so now here's making a point that only the Madhyam and Uttam Adhikaris can understand this. So that's why one is endeavoring as quickly as possible to get oneself to that position. That make sense? Well, it's just because one has taken up chanting and one is following the principles, and that's good enough. No, one has to be taken that knowledge, try to contemplate it, try to understand it, try to apply it in the life. Right? Because then the distinctions one makes are on the spiritual platform. The neophyte tends to make it on the material platform. Right? I'm intelligent, someone else is not. I'm from this community, that one's not. This and that. You know what I'm saying? These all come up from that. But that has nothing to do with it. Because otherwise, then it's a mode of passion, a mode of ignorance. You don't see the soul, or you think the souls are different. You know what I'm saying? Like that, before, you know, the American souls are different from Russian souls, like that, or Western souls and Indian souls, you know, like that. But it's nothing to do with that. It's nothing to do with that. Makes sense. Welcome back. Okay, so then there, yes.
Then the Madhya must realize the knowledge of Brahman means the difference and oneness. Sometimes the Madhya must.
Yes.
They can come to the position to the platform of realization, or do they stay in the understanding only? Do they have realization of that, of Brahman?
Meaning? Why couldn't they have realization?
I mean, the Madhyamas could understand the knowledge, but he said that the Uttama Adhikaris and Madhyamas, they both understand.
Yes, I mean, your Uttama is working on that principle. That's how they see everything at all times. The Madhyama will make the distinctions within that to be able to work with it. You know what I'm saying? Because you're having to take someone who's not Krishna conscious and make them Krishna conscious. Does that make sense? Well, the other one is taking in that they're already Brahman, so there's no need to make Brahman God conscious, because Brahman's Brahman. You understand? So they don't make that kind of distinction for preaching. Doesn't mean they can't interact. It just means that they don't interact as far as preaching goes. Yes?
I'm just saying that the Uttama just kind of seems that everything is Brahman, so... Is that talking about the Vaishnava Uttama or just the Uttama on the Brahman level?
It depends upon what it is. It could be Vaishnava or non-Vaishnava. Means if we're saying Uttamadhikari, that means Vaishnava, so that it's Brahma-Bhuta. So you're seeing it in relation to Krishna. Right? But those who are the salvationists, then they may be liberated, so then they can see it that way. But they don't see it in connection with the Supreme. They think Brahman is Supreme. So Brahman is Supreme, but it's not the Supreme form of Supreme. Right? So you have Supreme, More Supreme, Most Supreme. So that they don't see. So they're not able to understand the Supremes. Right? Like that. Does that make sense?
Do the Uttama see that the Jiva's conditioned souls are in Maya?
The Uttama, no. It doesn't mean... And even if it does, it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? Because they're not making that kind of distinction. The same soul, just they're acting, how you say? They may be identifying themselves in that particular way, that's why then you deal with them in that way, right? Jarabharat, the soul is thinking it's a deer without a mother, so therefore you deal like it as a deer without a mother. So that's what they're saying, is his attachment to the deer is very different than, you know, possibly our attachment to the deer. Or we think it's cute and cuddly. He's looking at it that the soul thinks it's cute and cuddly. Therefore, you deal with it as cute and cuddly. You know what I'm saying? It's not that he sees cute and cuddly and needs cute and cuddly, that's why he's interacting with it. The soul identifies in that way, so therefore he responds to them how they deal. You know what I'm saying? Because they as Brahman identify with that, therefore other aspects of Brahman reciprocate with that. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that they can't function, you know, here. It's just that they function from it from very different perspective. They see everything as the supreme. That's what I was mentioning before. The Upanishad is saying this, is that the entire world is the supreme. Therefore, a peaceful and saintly person should devote himself to worshiping the supreme. So everything is the supreme. Everything is connected with Krishna. So he devotes himself to worshiping the Lord. You know what I'm saying? But we're seeing the external form of it, and from that deciding that it's a deer. The other one is seeing the soul identifies itself as a deer. That's why it has that body. So they're dealing with the soul, which means you deal through that soul's conditioned identity. You know what I'm saying? So if the soul identifies as servant of Krishna, you're dealing with that. If it identifies as a deer, you deal with that. Right? And so in either case, that will be expressed through the body. Right? They're devotees, so you interact with a devotee as you would with a devotee. They think they're a deer, you deal with it because the soul thinks they're a deer. You understand? Rather than, oh, here's a deer, deers are nice, so I interact. If deers are not nice, I don't interact. You know what I'm saying? That's the conditional nature. Right? So the Madhva is dealing with the conditional nature, but he is also seeing this level of the of Brahman. Does that make some sense? Hello. Does that make some sense? Yeah. Yes. No, that's compassion that you're dealing with. The interaction is based on compassion. Right? It says the Lord deals with the living entities because of compassion. So that's how Brahman acts. So then if someone's on that Uttama platform, on the liberated platform, seeing Brahman, therefore, as Brahman, you act with other aspects of Brahman through compassion. That's just how Brahman interacts with Brahman. You know what I'm saying? But there, you know, how you say it? Does that make sense? Why doesn't it make sense?
Uttama is seeing everything higher than themselves.
Because they're not making that kind of distinction like you are. You know, you're making higher and lower. They're just making whatever it is. You know, it's means like it's an apple, therefore you peel it and cut it up. It's an orange, therefore you squeeze it. But you're not making a distinction, one's higher, one's lower. It's just apples are apples, oranges are oranges. Nice saying. We make a distinction, one's better than another. That's why we act, and we'll tend to go for whatever's the higher. But for them, everything already is the highest. It's already Brahman. So therefore, you just interact with it. You don't have to distinguish one is better than the other. You know what I'm saying? You know, the shoe is the kind of Brahman that goes on the foot, Brahman. And then that, the foot and the shoe Brahman go on the ground Brahman. You know, it's just there's the relationships are there, but you're not saying one is better than the other because it's all Brahman. It's just where it goes is Brahman. You know what I'm saying? So there is some appreciation of position and relationship and the elements of, you know, appreciation of interaction and all that. But that is not the prominence. The prominence is the appreciation of Brahman. That's why it's simultaneously considered a rasa, but at the same time not a rasa. Rasa in that there is some taste, there's some experience, but actual being interactive, it's not. So even though you're interacting, you're not really interacting. You know what I'm saying? You're interacting with the field. It means with the principle. You're not interacting specifically necessarily with the individual. You as an individual, them as an individual, have a relationship. No, you as Brahman, them as Brahman, you have a relationship. Just means if there's something, whatever is the element, that it coincides. So everything has its position and duties, you are following that. Does it make sense?
Yeah. What do they do to see every other thing is being servant of Krishna?
Why wouldn't they?
Why do they see them as...
Why would they? Because that's the nature of the soul. The constitutional position of the soul is servant of God. That's the reality. Just the soul itself may understand that and see themselves that way, or they may not and not see themselves that way, so they don't act that way. But it doesn't mean that's not what they are. You know, it's just like you have a thief and he's gone and stolen money from the bank. Right? So when the police catch him, do they see it as his money? Or they see it as the bank's money, right? So that's the point. It doesn't matter whether it's in the bank or it's in this other person's hand, it's still the bank's money. But because he's taken that money, therefore he's dealt with as a thief. You know, but at the bank, they have the money and move it around and that. They also take it out of the vault, put it different places, but they're not considered thieves because they understand that the bank money belongs to the bank. Like that. Well, here, then they're trying to claim it as their own. So that's the difference. So it's just, you just deal with it. So the money is dealt with in the same way. It's respectfully dealt with. But the form that money is, therefore, how you say, the situation in which the money is there is situated, and according to how others are relating with it, you deal with them. You understand? So you're free from all material contamination, you're free from, you know, happiness and distress, from, you know, gain and loss, all those different things. And so that being freed from material pain and pleasure then is a great position. But as far as what can be tasted by the soul of actual, the dynamic interaction between the different elements of Brahman, based on a relationship, that is not tasted. You know what I'm saying? So the potential of what the soul can taste is not taken advantage of. Therefore, that's why it's not recommended. That's why even sometimes it's not even considered a rasa. You know, Shanta is not even really considered a rasa. Because the soul can attain higher. You know what I'm saying? Those energies that are expansions of the Sandini potency, that's their natural position. That's who they are. So for them to be situated like that, it's fine. But the jivas are not from the Sandini potency. They're from the Samvit potency. That means they're involved in the pastimes. Right? The others are just the existence and creating the environment or the existence of the spiritual realm. You know what I'm saying? Vrindavan means it has cows. Goloka means it has cows. Right? So therefore, if there's no cows, how is it Goloka? So the existence of Goloka then is manifest because it has cows. Vrindavan because it's forests. You know, Dwarka because it's palaces. So therefore, they're all doing their proper duty. And they're all part of this. You know what I'm saying? But the jiva's not that. Jiva is not existence. Jiva is chit. So that means with proper understanding and proper endeavor, that's their position. They're not the cause of happiness. They're not Pladini. They're not the cause of existence. Right? So he's in the middle. So that's why the jiva can't say, I'm the controller or I'm the enjoyer, because he's not from that potency. You know what I'm saying? He's just different. So it's a matter of knowing who you are. So the jiva, therefore, an activity, and then the real activity is going between the sat and the ladini. Right? So that means the enjoyer, Krishna, and the enjoyed, his internal potency. So the jiva, therefore, with proper understanding, can be involved in the activity of their interaction as an instrument, right? So because of the oneness, you can taste that rasa, you know? Same time, because of the difference, you're one as an individual able to taste, but you have a different position than they do, right? They're controller, they are controlled, and we are instrument in that controller controlling the controlled. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's jiva. You know what I'm saying? Because we're taking it here, jiva means they're actually servant of the servant. But the term jiva can also, one of the meanings is servant. That's why then the internal potency or the external potency can be called jiva. Does that make sense? So Lakshmi Ji or Maya can be called jiva because they are servants of Krishna. You know what I'm saying? But the jiva, the jivatma, then specific, because they're not called jivatma, they're called jiva. We're jivatma, we're small. We're servants of those servants. Does that make sense? So they're servants, we're also servants. But the point is we're servants of those servants. We're not independent. Does that make sense? Yes? No? That makes sense. Yeah. You have a question? Yes.
Is it correct that Madhyama is, seeing simultaneously the difference in the commonalities of the living entities, due to his own conditioning, although he's seeing them as spiritual souls, he would prefer some kind of association against another. I mean, he will choose satsang against satsang.
That anybody will do. Means, the point is the uttama, maybe to our eyes here, is not worried about the satsang, but in the spiritual platform, he's very worried. Because in the pastimes, they will be, you know, sticking with their particular group. But here, there's nothing for them to gain, so they don't bother. So their consciousness is in the pastimes. So that's why generally is that they don't worry about it here. So to worry about it here, then they'll come and take the mood of the Madhyama and make the distinction. Does that make sense?
Yes. At the same time, Madhyama, he will avoid the inimical persons, whereas the Uttama...
The Uttama won't, but if the Uttama is preaching, he will. You know what I'm saying? The point is the Madhyama platform is what everybody uses, Kanista, Madhyama, and Uttama, for preaching. You make those distinctions. You know what I'm saying? It's just a matter of how broad is their spectrum of what they can deal with. Right? The neophyte will be more narrow, will be more specific, you know, to their conditioned nature due to attachment. The Madhyama, he will use his conditioned nature in the Lord's service, but because if you're dealing without attachment, it broadens the scope. But the Uttama, he's not dealing from the conditioned platform, so therefore there's no need to worry about it, right? But as a Madhyama, he'll take, you know, certain areas or this or that, but it's not that he can't do work with anybody, if anything.
Madhyama is doing it slight attachment.
It's not a matter of slight attachment, it's a matter of they're still working within their conditioned nature. Like that. You know, it's just like this. The guy's in the shower, you know, actually taking a bath, scrubbing and soap and all this. Is he dirty or is he clean? He's in the process, but how do you categorize him? In general, with the dirty people or with the clean people? Simultaneously, but where will a person who takes a bath, is a dirty person or a clean person? A dirty person. This is your problem. This is your problem. This is a spiritual problem. Is you cannot appreciate the good. If you see any little fault, you throw the whole thing out. This is a spiritual defect, which is common. You're not the only one with it. Millions and billions of people have this problem. But that's what makes the difference. Is the Madhyama simply looks at it, what is the good part, and works with that. The neophyte, if even it's a good part, you could work with it. But if it's a fault, then, oh, the mother, she's attached to her family, therefore she can't be a devotee. What has that got to do with anything? You know, Krishna was attached to her family, the Pandavas, but she's able to be a pure devotee. You know what I'm saying? So you're deifying devotional service that no one can do it. And therefore, instead of establishing devotional service, then you'll establish moralism or some other, you know, form of justice and pranamoy, and feel that that's devotional service. A person who takes a bath is considered within the category of someone who's clean. Because how do you get clean? By taking a bath. So someone who's clean has taken a bath. Someone who appreciates cleanliness will take a bath when it's necessary. So if he's taking a bath, it's in pursuance of cleanliness. Therefore, you categorize him with the clean, not with the dirty. The dirty means someone who does not value cleanliness. Therefore, they don't take a bath. Understand? That's the difference in perspective. Because you're trying to look at it, well, what's there, what's the fault? Well, the Uttama is the top, so that means there must be some fault in the Madhyama, why they're not there. No. The point is the Madhyama is above the neophyte. It's like this. If you take the three, we take it as there's Kanista, there's Madhyama, there's Uttama, right? As the three things. Now, in category, generally the tendency of the neophyte is that there's neophytes, and right next to them, right, squashed against them is the Madhyamas. And then this big ocean of distance, then there's the Uttama. But actually, it's the exact opposite. The difference between the neophyte and the Madhyama is huge. The difference between a Madhyama and an Uttama is actually quite close. That's the way it works. Just like Brahmins and Kshatriyas are right next to each other. But Kshatriyas and Vaishya, there's a big gap. And then Vaishyas and Shudras are very close. You understand? But there's commonality. Therefore, most of the time, you don't make that kind of distinction. But when push comes to shove, you do. And now you have pushed the wrong buttons. And so now we have come to shove. You understand? So the point is all this is there. I went through the exercise of it. Some were trying to find it out. Some are trying to find the fault. So understanding means find what's the fault of the Madhyama, why they're not an Uttama, rather than what is it that makes the Madhyama special compared to that. Because Prabhupada is saying only the Madhyamas and Uttamas. He doesn't. They're categorized together. You know what I'm saying? He's not saying the Madhyamas and the neophytes. He doesn't put those together. Madhyamas are always standing with the Uttamas or on their own. You know what I'm saying? They're categorized together. Pure devotional service starts from Madhyama. This is probably one of the least understood and practiced points in our culture. A Madhyama means he's a pure devotee. And most devotees can't tell the difference between a pure devotee, an uttamadhikari, a nityasiddha. They think they're the same word. No, they're different. Right? A Madhyama, an Uttama, and a Prema Bhakti, they're all pure devotees. Right? Does that make sense? A nityasiddha is only someone on the platform of Prema. An uttamadhikari is someone who's liberated. They're on the platform of Bhava. So they're not a Madhyama, but they're not also on the platform of Prema. So they're completely, they're common, they got a common element, but they're different positions. So that's why devotees, well, unless you're, you know, Nityasiddha, Uttamadhikari, this, that, whatever it is, they go on, then you're just, you know, you're just a nonsense, you're just a write-off. You're no different than me. So I can walk all on your head. And that's why devotees much of the time don't make advances, because they have no respect for devotees. They just treat him as something very common you just find anywhere on the street. That gets in the way of devotion. When the devotee respects other devotees, and that is dynamic. You see, the zone goes, it expands, it does everything. And then the day that they make it into duality, bang, it stops. How many days did it take for the Russian yatra to stop dead in its tracks? And what happened? What did they do? What was different from the day it stopped, from the day it was most dynamic yatras in the movement? What was the difference, according to what I just was explaining? That's right. Before that, within one senior devotee falls down, now all devotees and respect for everybody's thrown out. And that's when this Russian yatra died. It's that simple. And if you understand this, then you understand preaching. You understand devotional culture. You understand Vaishnavism. You don't understand this, you'll never be good at preaching. Because while you're preaching, you're sowing the seeds of duality. And so, how will the two function together? They don't. We're just being real, Prabhu. And what is this reality? You're saying Maya is reality. So that means you're some variety of materialist. So materialism and devotional service don't go together so well. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's why we're trying to figure out what it is there that makes it in the position. You know, what makes them special, so then I can aspire for that. Or what is it that makes it that I am not on that platform? Since devotional service gets serious at Madhyama, what am I doing that makes it so I'm not on that platform? Looking for that. But simply just to analytically point it out, okay, you know, this one's here, that one's there, and well, let's drop these guys down a notch, you know, and these guys here, and, you know, put these guys like that. And so, but what does that do for you or anybody else? You know what I'm saying? It's not valuable in devotional service. You have to be able to use the knowledge, right? Manana means you contemplate it, you try to apply it. That's why then the question should be in line with how to apply this in my life, right? Then it takes on a different flavor. It can be exactly the same point, but the flavor is different. Does that make sense? And so it's the flavor that makes it. What's the difference between Vrindavan and Mathura? Or Mathura and Dwarka, Dwarka and Vaikuntha? The flavor, that's all. So if the flavor is wrong, everything will be wrong. Does that make sense? Okay, so we'll end here. I guess we'll continue with Sutra 15 tomorrow.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki Jaya Nitai Gaura Premarandi
Absolutely.